Blog Talk Radio.
Another episode of Wake Up African People, and this is the truth, Dr. Akbar Muslim. And we are here tonight on the anniversary of Frederick Jermaine Carter's lynching in Mississippi in 2010. And tonight I am here with my co-host, Brother B, and Frederick Jermaine Whitaker, Frederick Jermaine Carter, aunt. Brother Bartley, please introduce the queen.
Yes, good evening, brothers and sisters, and welcome to another episode in a live broadcast of Wake Up African People. In the words of our ancient Egyptian ancestors, I greet you with Mayat Hotep, which means peace. Tonight is a sad occasion for the family of Frederick Jermaine Carter, for it is, like Brother Akbar stated, is the anniversary of his suspicious death in Greenwood, Mississippi, in the year 2010. But tonight we have his brave and courageous aunt here to speak on behalf of the family, and we want to welcome her to the Wake Up African People radio broadcast. And we want the sister to please enlighten our audience to what happened to your nephew and share with our listeners the pain and suffering that the family had went through since his death. And like so many other young black men across this country, whether they be lynched or shot down, it's happening and something has to be done. So Sister Shalia Ross, would you please come on the show and tell our people what's going on?
Good evening, and thank you for allowing me to take this opportunity and speak about my nephew, Frederick Jermaine Carter. The thing is that this evening I would love to talk a little bit about Jermaine. Frederick Jermaine Carter. It's been 5 years to this day. He has been lynched, and my focus is right now is I know that what has happened to my nephew Frederick Jermaine Carter is not much that he's not going to come back, and is not much we can do with him being deceased, but we can move forward and deal with the living injustice has caused his death. So I will just give you a little briefing about, you know, actually what had transpired when Jermaine coming up to his death on the day that he was found lynched. The day before, he was out working with his stepfather, and that was the day that he come up missing, which was on December 2nd and December 3rd. They found him in an all-white neighborhood, back out in the fields and a tree where he was lynched. They found him hanging, and this is how we actually found him, you know, from the picture that you see of him posted on Google and Facebook and Twitter. So we are still working on trying to get justice for him. I'm here to try and enlighten our listeners on, you know, about whatever questions they may have and whatever they want to talk about. But there's just so much that I can say about Jermaine. Jermaine was a good kid, and it just saddened me to know that his life has been cut short.
Yes, ma'am. I understand what you're saying. And it seemed to be endemic of what's going on all over the nation, that so many people are losing their sons and daughters under mysterious situations where they're saying that, you know, he hung himself, et cetera. Would you please go into that, how they try to sell this idea to the people that he lynched himself or he hung himself, committed suicide?
Well, we know that he didn't commit suicide. And he didn't kill himself. Jermaine, on the day that Jermaine had been found lynched, well, prior to that, when Jermaine left home, he left home with his stepfather to go to do a job. And the job was painting people's homes and, you know, to renovate houses and whatever. So when Jermaine left home, that's what he was doing. He was on a job. Now, I don't know what transpired between him being with his stepfather, where he was, when he come up missing. But we do know that there are circumstances that has transpired that I can't elaborate on at this point because I would be speculating. Knowing that this case has not been investigated. So my thing is that Jermaine did not leave home intentionally to go out and hang himself in somebody's tree, let alone in an all-white neighborhood. Now, if Jermaine wanted to do that, he didn't have to go 30-some miles, 38 miles away from home to do that, because where he lived, there was trees and things out in back of at my grandmother's house. So trees everywhere. So now if he was that desperate to go out and lynch himself, he didn't have to go that far to do that. But like I said, his intentions when he left home, he was going with his stepdad to paint someone's house. And that was the job that he was on a job. He did not leave the house to go and hang himself in somebody's in an all-white neighborhood. So from there, it has not been investigated. I have called the DA's office. I've called the FBI office in Washington, D.C. And, well, of course, I didn't get anywhere with that. And the FBI, when I called Washington, D.C., the FBI told me, don't effing call there no effing more. I'm asking about any case because when I mentioned Jermaine's name, he was very well aware who I was talking about. You know, so that was how I was treated through our telephone call to the FBI there in Washington, D.C. So now if we have those, if we're dealing with those kind of people that speak that way concerning cases like my nephew, just imagine the other families that probably called there and didn't get anywhere. So now they never investigated. The DA never pushed the issue. The lawyer never pushed it. And so the old sheriff never pushed it. So everything just got swept under the rug, you know. And I am trying to keep it alive by bringing it up, you know, as often I can and putting it out there. So, again, my focus is on trying to deal with why the attorney that accepted this case pro bono didn't do anything or haven't done anything, haven't heard from her in about 3 or 4 years. And so, well, of course, out of sight, out of mind. So this is where we're at right now. We do, and people have been asking, was it a money issue? Well, there are many attorneys that did call her and asked if they could jump on board and help her out with this case. She refused the help. She told them she didn't need them. And, well, of course, she was getting donations from press conferences, and she was going to the churches, and different ones were sending her monies. And then on top of that, she had set up a website where people was going in and donating money. So we have not heard from her. So money is not the issue here. It's just that my thing is I'm not sure what she trying to prove, or was she genuine about taking this case and doing something about it. So far, we haven't heard anything from her. But I did do a little background check on her, and I do know that she's a corporate lawyer. A corporate lawyer don't handle these kind of cases, and she never, ever have handled these types of cases. So now my thing is that she have taken this case and maybe sold out on the case. We don't know. So now we have to do some auditing and checking into the case.
Well, you know, lawyers do that every time. They sell out on cases. I've had one to sell out on one of my cases with a medical case.
Mm-hmm.
But they do it all the time. We forget that lawyers are officers of the state. You know, that's who give them their rules and everything that they have to argue with in court. And they can't go against them rules. And they drink coffee and have breakfast, everything with these same people in the courthouse. And I want to talk about Jermaine's hanging. You know, they say that he committed suicide. Where did he get the rope? I mean, he would have had to pack the rope up at home, you know, in a bag and bring the rope. If he had this thing all planned out, he would have to get the rope, bring the rope with him, and have this all this stuff planned out. And then I want you to talk about the tree, you know, how tall the tree was and how tall he was and the improbability of him being able to lynch himself.
Well, I don't know how he could have done that, because if you notice the rope that they showed in the videos when they actually found him hanging from the tree. It was a little thin rope. And the way it was tied, and the tree was quite, I mean, the limb was quite, I can't tell you the dimensions of how far it was, how high it was. But it was probably too far for him to even try and pull himself up from the ground. But they tried to say that he used an old picnic table that was under the tree, which the picnic table had been sitting there for I don't know how long, because it was rotten and it was broken down. They tried to say that he pulled the picnic table around to the side where he supposedly had lynched himself. And actually, they said he stood up on the picnic table, but if you look at it and see how the picnic table is all rotten and busted down, there was no way in the world he could have done that. But evidently, they say he taking the rest of the rope and put it in his pocket. So now I don't know how all of that happened. And when he's in the process of lynching himself. And then on top of that, he was supposed to have been on private property. Now, the other people, when they found him lynched, okay, and there are other people that was coming in on that property, then white people was coming from out of the woodwork, you know, saying, well, then you're on private property. But yet Jermaine was hung in a tree on private property. So now, if Jermaine was wandering out on somebody's private property out in the back of our white neighborhood, and there's a dog, they had dog houses, a dog pounds in the back of the house, then the dog started, I'm sure the dogs was barking or whatever, if that's the case, if anybody's trespassing on private property. So now, if Jermaine went out there to hang himself, wouldn't the dogs would awaken these people?
Mm-hmm.
So now that doesn't sound right to me, you know.
Shalia, you said that there's no paperwork on this case as far as the investigation, right?
Well, no one has investigated this case, no.
Well, that's illegal,
not even,
isn't it?
Let me put it like this here. Not even his attorney has inquired about this case.
I mean... That's beyond. Somebody got to be accountable for that kind of action, you know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. In other words, that's why I say we cannot, I know at this point we can't worry about, we can't bring Jermaine back from the dead and what has, you know, and try to do something about it. We have to deal with the living today, and we have to hold people accountable that had anything to do with Jermaine's case, like the old sheriff, the FBI was there, and then this lawyer that comes in. We have to start doing, I will have to start doing homework along with supporters helping, and at this point, when you're trying to get someone to help support you in trying to find the truth of the matter, it's very, very hard and it's very difficult. I did have one attorney to he wanted to help because he had actually he was an attorney and a forensic scientist, and he's one of the best in the world because he was the one that the forensic scientist was the one that was investigating Nicole Smith case and J.F. Kennedy and Martha Luther King. Now, this gentleman, he wanted to help with Jermaine's case. But this attorney that they have, this woman don't want no help. Now, this guy... he was saying that he can blow this case straight out of the water because he was looking at the videos that was being put up on Google. Mm-hmm. And he saw where this attorney that taken this case, and she was out there in the crime scene where all of these people walking around where the crime scene was. And so if there was any evidence out there, you couldn't find it because she had all of these people walking around out there.
Mm.
You know, so now we are, you know, like I said, that's where I don't know who taken Jermaine's picture the way it was and the way we look at it now out there, you know, him lynched in a tree. But whoever took those pictures, I mean, in a matter of, it was just like in a matter of within an hour or two, his face and his body from lynched in a tree was plastered all over the news, the local news down there in Mississippi. But it never hit the media.
Uh-huh.
It never hit the main media like NBC or Fox News or CNN. They never. Now they did talk about. I believe it was on. It wasn't CNN. It was, I forget the name. One of the one that covered Minister Louis Farrakhan when he was, they did the Million Man March. Now they did say something about Jermaine at one time.
Hmm.
So, but it never did hit the main media. There was magazines, there was different radio stations and different local papers where it actually hit. But down in the South, it did hit, you know, in that area, but it didn't go any further.
Uh-huh.
No one mentioned it. No one, immediate news never mentioned Jermaine's lynching.
Where was Al Sharpton? Where was
Al Sharpton? Let's put it, you know how they always show up at things like this? Al Sharpton never showed up. Jesse Jackson never showed up. Well, the NAACP, they talked about it, but they never showed up. There was a civil rights leader. His name was Wendell Lee. He's from Memphis, Tennessee. He was the only gentleman that was given press conference down there in Greenwood, Mississippi. Now, every time he gave a press conference, now, this is kind of strange. Every time he put on a press conference and draw people in, this attorney, which took Jermaine's case, she will always show up and take over the press conference. How she did it, who knows? You know, she come and then cut him clear out of the picture of a press conference that he put together.
Hmm.
And then she was taking checks, offers where people was donating monies towards the cause of Jermaine's case. This is why I know for a fact these people gave money, and I know for a fact they went on the site that she put up. People was donating money. She was getting money from all over because I got calls from different people down in Mississippi where a lot of the big-time churches are also giving her money because she was going to different churches talking about Jermaine's case and that she needed help, you know, raising money for his case. Now, these people was giving big money. I'm talking multimillion-dollar churches that was giving her money. And so just so happened in one of the counties there, a lady called me and she tells me that she's a lawyer, and she's the head of the newsletter in their church, and she wanted to know where was my sister and her family, why wasn't they not with this woman, you know, when she's going to different churches and asking for donations, and that she was letting me know that their church was giving her a large sum of donation. And she wanted to know why haven't they heard any more about this case. But yet she was letting me know. She also sent me a clippings of this the lady, the attorney, which was the lady Valerie Hicks Poe. And I have it in a newsletter that she sent me. And I just said, well, I couldn't explain that to her because I understand that she has been doing this at other churches as well. So now this is why I say she have gotten money, and evidently she may have been paid off, because during the time Jermaine was being lynched there in Mississippi, she had a large case in Mississippi with the state troopers. So she was going back and forth to court with them, and just so happened, who's to say, she just, you know, they made a deal. And this woman showed up at my sister's house, and I don't know what she said to my sister in order for her to get her hands on this case, but when she got her hand on this case, that was in order to, that was in order for anybody else come forth, they was going to fight them as far as the case concerned, and she can turn them away and say, well, this case, I have this case, and so now, and I'm asking, I'm telling you that I don't need your help. But she didn't want the Minister Louis Farrakhan to even have anything to do with the case either. But I'm glad that he did, and I was there to tell my sister, he is right, they are right, you don't need to put your son in the ground until you get a second opinion. I said, because the way they did they didn't do an autopsy. They took his body to the coroner's office on a Friday evening, and then they said they don't do. I call, and they said, well, we don't check the body out on a weekend. We have to do it during the weekday. So now they brought the body to the coroner's office on Friday evening, and they released his body on that Monday morning for my sister to start setting up arrangements for to bury her son. And we know that they wanted to get his body down in the ground right away. And so I said to my sister, we cannot bury him unless we have a second opinion. And, well, she didn't have the money, and, well, of course, we was trying to figure out what we was going to do, and so Minister Louis Farrakhan, they did step up, and they did not want to ship his body out of there, because they would not allow us to ship his body out in Jackson, Mississippi. They turned us away. And so now here we go. We got to figure out a way how we trying to get his body out of Mississippi. But we did, because I have a cousin that works for the airlines. And we called her in Boston, and she got, and we told her what the problem was, and she says, give me about 15 minutes, she says, and I'll call you back. When she called us back, she says, get his body to Memphis, Tennessee, which was an hour and almost two-hour drive. Get him there early that morning. And so they had to leave in the middle of the night at like about 2 o'clock in the morning in order to have his body there in Memphis, Tennessee at around about 4 or 5 o'clock that morning so that they can abort his body and get it out of there. And so the minute the FBI found out and the minute that the sheriff's department found out that what had happened, that his body is no longer there in Mississippi and that it was going for a second autopsy, all of a sudden the sheriff's department And the FBI changed their story.
Wow. It's more to this story than, I mean, this is the kind of thing that used to happen in the South back in the early 50s, in the 50s and the 60s, when they were killing our people in Mississippi. And the sheriff and the FBI would act like nothing happened.
Well, we know these are the people that these are the people behind all of this. We have to understand that they're not there for us. These are the people that are running. These are the people that are running these types of things, and so of course they are the leaders of the pack. Mm-hmm. We cannot close our eyes talking about these people going to give us justice and these people going to look out for on our behalf. We know for a fact that they are not going to do that because we are dealing with the perpetrators. We are dealing with the evil ones. I don't care if they're in Washington, D.C. or anywhere else, or in the FBI. Who you think run the FBI? Who do you think run the CIA? Who you think all these people are, even on the police department? Now, I did check on the sheriff, the one that's supposed to have been investigating Jermaine and lied in the first place. Now, he was appointed to that office in Greenwood, Mississippi, back in 1976, and there has been nobody else in that sheriff's department but him. So you know he knows what's going on if he ain't part of it.
You know, I hate to sound like nerd or something, but that sounds like a ritual, some type of, they might have killed him for some type of ritual for it to get to this point where they don't even have no written material and you can't get nobody to look into this case.
That's what they are. When you are, let's put it like this here, when you are teaching your kids about hate, and you're in the hate, I'm talking about in these teenage boys, white boys, from kids on up, and then they indoctrinate them into the group of the white supremacists. Of course they do rituals, and it's about killing. You have to kill a person in order to become a full pledge of that group.
Yes.
Whether it's a baby, whether it's a teenager, whether it's a grown man or grown woman or grown child or whatever, when your kids and your loved ones coming up missing, you better believe they using them for rituals. And they are not going to let them come out footloose and fancy free. When they come out, they're going to come out already dead. Whatever they do to them, that's what happens. That's why I say no family, no mother, no father, or no family should allow this to happen to their kids. I don't care if they've been beaten to death or they have been taken away, and then all of a sudden when you get them back, you're going to, just because of how you're feeling, you know, you're sad, you're crying, your mind is not in the right place, and you're not thinking straight, that's what they know. They know that you want to just go ahead and bury your loved ones and get it out of the way. But I'm telling you, families should start thinking, and sometimes we got people out there don't even think that way. All they know is they are in a sad way. I lost my child. I lost my family member. But it's better that you get a second autopsy done, because you will find out the truth about what's going on with your loved ones. Mm-hmm. So this is what happened with Jermaine. We found out that the autopsy that they came up with, the first autopsy don't even identify with the second autopsy. There's different. There's two different things, and you know.
You can imagine
what they did.
That's right. Right.
You can imagine. So now, that's what I'm saying. We have to. That's why I say to anybody that asks, you know, it's time for us to be smart, and we have to get ourselves together, and we have to unite and help one another, like it used to be. You know, we got to come out this fear of what if. You know, we got to get away from that. Who do you fear, yourself, or do you fear them out there? Because we still live in a society, and of course, we're not going anywhere. And I don't care what they say about you need to leave and go back to your country, you need this, and you. We don't need to do anything but come together, and we need to stand strong.
Mm-hmm.
Get over our fears.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that.
No, you cannot.
We have to overcome our fears.
Sure.
And I think it was put in us early childhood. You know, it was handed down. It's in our genetics that we fear this man. You see what I'm saying? Subconsciously, these Negroes got fear in them, because if you look at the amount of money that we spend as a group, compared to the amount of businesses that we have, it is a tragedy. You see what I'm saying? So when something happened to our people, like what happened to your family, we're not in a position to do anything, because the people who got money, they're not even thinking on this. They're not even on the same plane that we're on. So we are a divided people. So therefore, you really don't have no help.
No, you don't have much help at all. You know, people feel sad. They when they see stuff like this here, and I sometimes wonder, you know, what goes through their mind when you are have family gatherings and you see your family around and everybody's having a great time. And like my husband will always say to me, he says, you know, it's so good to have family reunion because you never know who you may not see. It might be the last time you see that person. You don't know that. You don't know what's going to transpire. But that's just it. And the reason being that I say what I say is because we cannot walk in fear anymore. We cannot, we just can't do that. I've never, ever been a fearful, and I guess I get this from my grandmother, because she didn't fear anything or anybody, and she was born in the year of 1909, so now, and she lived to see 100 plus, and she rid me from a baby up until I was 12 years old. But it's one thing I have not forgot. I watched how she carried herself, how she didn't show no fear in nobody. I don't care if they was white, black, green, or gray. She, I mean, everything stood right by her. And if it was wrong, she would get you straight. And that's what I say. And maybe I'm just, like they say, in every family, there's a different material of different people are made of. There's some that will stand up, and there's some just don't want to stand up. They just want to just, you know, forget about it. Well, we can't do nothing. No, we can't. We can't do nothing about it because he or she is already gone. But we can continue to try to get justice for that person, because it doesn't stop at Jermaine, and it doesn't stop at any other child that you find out that is being killed or lynched in the street or whatever, shot down. It's still happening today, and it's not going to stop until people come together.
Yeah, that has been our problem from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
coming together. The thing is, who is going to start it off? You follow what
I'm
saying?
I think it already has started off, to tell you the truth. It has, and the more I see and read upon how the universities, you know, mm-hmm. how the different universities are, and I'm talking about Harvard, Brown, and all these different colleges that, you know, prestige colleges, you see these young people are coming together as far as trying to get justice for minorities. And because they are sick and tired of being ridiculed as well, especially people of color, is going to these different colleges. And so now we're seeing white, black, Hispanics, Indians, you name it. They are coming together in those universities, and they are laying down the truth about what's going on in our country today. And these are you're talking about doctors, engineers, and you're talking about our future. So now if these kids are getting sick and tired of this, well, then guess what? It's usually the older ones are the ones that don't step up to the plate, you know. It's the young people, because it is their future. And if this is what they're doing to the young people, well, then by the time they finish wiping them out, well, then there is nothing there is left, because the older people are dying out anyways. It's the young people they're killing off.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we're at right now. And again, you know, if there are any questions or, you know, or anything that someone has to say or about the situation, you know, or can give some kind of helpful information, that would be great, you know. But we must never forget what has transpired over 400 years ago, and is still happening in the present, is still alive and well in this life today, and not just in the South, but all over the world.
Yes, ma'am.
Look at them. I'm telling all over the world, you know.
Right.
Now, they call the refugees are coming over to the United States, and they don't want the refugees over here. And so now are tens and thousands of refugees coming into the United States. And, well, of course, now you see how the people – don't want the Muslims over here. They don't want these people over here. But then I'm looking at the fact that, all right, they are over there tearing these people home. I'm thinking to myself, now, these people ain't never thought about coming to the United States until they went over there and did what? Tore up their homes, killed their families, and now where they have to go? So now the United, and now you got the different governors and the politicians allowing them to come over here and to do what? And I'm praying and hoping that they don't have these poor people to come over here and have something else set up. They got some game plan coming on, and the minute that it happened, of course it's going to hit the news for everybody to think that these people coming over here starting a what? A war. I'm praying that they're not setting these poor people, these folks up. You know, we're already set up. We're already dying in the street. They've been doing it to us since we've been, you know, since they've been here. Because we haven't gone anywhere. This is our land.
Well, we're going to be, if we don't hurry up and organize, we're going to be integrated out of existence.
Well, I believe that, you know what? Before it ends, all good things on their part. They look at it as a good thing at what they're doing. They think they're really doing a jest for themselves. But all of that is going to come to an end. They can't see it coming, but it's coming. All of that is going to come to an end. They can do whatever they want. They can and keep doing what they're doing because it's not going to stop them. But when they start coming to the end, it's going to be a whole lot of changing going on. The shoe is going to be on the other foot.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at this situation like whosoever is pulling the strings. You know, we are like puppets here, and somebody is pulling the strings politically, economically, socially, spiritually, religiously, or whatever. Somebody is pulling our strings, and it's headed towards, they want this to be an international country where people from all over the world come here. But the most unwanted out of all of that bunch is the so-called African-American. Everybody else is easy. I was reading an article today, and they were saying that a lot of the Mexicans and these other people, they were classifying them as white because the white race is dying out. So they're making other people come here just like those people supposed to be coming here from the Arab world. They got Arabs calling themselves white.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so that they can hold up their population. And they said in a couple of years, the white race is going to be a minority. But see, they still keep that split. You see, they're saying, well, you're going to have some people calling themselves Indians, some people calling themselves Hispanics, but anything but white. People are getting away from that white thing. And that's what putting fear in them.
Sure, you know, it is.
But, yeah, but we, us, they want to get rid of us, period. You know,
they've been trying to get rid of us as long as as long as you can go back and read about
it. It's something about this original man that they can't get rid of. Hello?
Yes.
Well,
I think the sisters. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, I think our phone might have cut off. Let me see. Okay. Let me see here. Something went wrong. But I want to say before I get the sister back, that, you know, the white racist rites of passage is to kill a black man or black woman, black child, or whoever black. That's their rites of passage. And this young brother you know, they saying they killed him. I mean, they saying that he killed himself. I mean, but we know that they killed him. This is like forensic science. You know, when you you get a murderer, they follow certain types of patterns. And the pattern for racists is lynching black people. And the sister also said that 15 miles, I believe, from where the brother was lynched, Emmett Till was killed and lynched. Let me try to get her back.
Okay.
I don't know what went wrong here. Okay, let me try to give her a call. Keep the audience. I'm going to try to give her a call, see what happened. Have her call back into the show.
Okay. Well, we were really getting deep into the show here when this happened. I'm trying to find out just what the listening audience is trying to find out. So I really can't comment on this particular case. But as we stated earlier, it looked to me like it's something ritualistic about this. If they can't get the proper information and they don't have no paper trail, no investigations or anything like that, that's pretty odd. That's not... this is not 1950 or 1960 or 1930. This is 2015. For this to be happening in this day and time, it goes to show you that there's something still going on that we're not paying too much attention to. And I think you said it earlier, Akbar, about the rites of passage. You know, a lot of these gangs have rites of passages. For instance, the Crips and the Bloods, they got their rituals.
Sure, they do.
Yeah,
and the Hell's Angels and all the motorcycle gang, white gangs got rites of passage, and their rites of passage to brutalize black people. I mean, black people are the only people in America that can be brutalized. And nothing's going to happen to you when you're white. And they already know this because it happens time and time again that nothing really happens to white people. Now, that brother Bird that was drugged by these white racists in the back of the car, I mean, these men are still, I mean, they say that they're in jail, but how do we know that they're in jail? And who's going to check and see if they're behind bars?
Nobody.
So you don't. Any of these white people that they claim they're putting in jail for killing black people are actually really in jail. Take them through the front door and lead them out the back door. Because black people never had rights in America because we're not considered citizens of America. We're conscripts of a war that was waged against our people, and those who were captured were enslaved by the whites and brought over here to build this nation.
Well,
so Jermaine, I would like to say R.I.P. to Jermaine, but I can't say it because Jermaine will never rest in peace until his murderer is apprehended and put to justice. And we're not going to get justice from the state. We're not going to get justice from the federal government. Black people are going to have to start enacting their own justice, as far as I'm concerned. The mic is yours, Brother B.
Well, you know, when you're dealing with people with the same mindset, so we don't have the same mindset. You know, I be listening to a lot of these programs that this group think that they have the answer. Another group think that they have the answer. We can't come together and unify around some type of functional unity. We cannot do that. And the more you're divided in a society where cohesiveness are the winners. Unity are the winners. People who have their families and things together, they are the winners. So they know that we are divided, our families are falling apart. So it's like we were back in slavery time, easy picking. Anytime they want to do some damage or have some fun or have some fun on a weekend, they get drunk and ride around in cars and harass black folks in the South and the North. Until we start really thinking about seriously finding a solution. See, we're not thinking about solution. We're thinking that they're going to come up with the solution. That's how brainwashed we are. We're looking for justice. We're looking for justice from a person who has shown over 400 years of injustice. To me, that's insane. You'll never get injustice, so therefore you have to look for priorities. What's our priorities? What's our options? We're not looking
what
at
are the
options.
Solutions? Mm-hmm.
Right. We're not looking in that direction. We're thinking, well, the Justice Department going to take care of it. We don't have to worry. We're sending it. You just showed us that anytime they want to shut down the justice system, they could shut it down.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And them children.
Been proven.
Of the white racists in the 60s are our current day baby boomers. You know, the people that's in offices in Washington, D.C., the people that wear these police outfits, the people who wear the judges' outfits. All these people were raised by white racists. We act like racism is something that went away 1,000 or 500 years ago. I mean, we're talking about the 60s, where they were lynching black men like it was going out of style. And as far as I'm concerned, they're still lynching, but we just don't see. I mean, somebody take you back in the woods way back there and nobody sees anything. They can lynch you, bury you, throw you in the river or whatever. And also, I like to elaborate that when the white people get this killing fever, they go around killing. They call it a thrill kill. You know, they get a thrill out of killing. You know, I mean, look at the TV.
They call it a picnic killing because, see, back in the they don't actually
sister.
Do it now like they used to be very open in the South where people come from all over when they done choose so many black people that they go into are lynching the trees, they will have picnics. That's where picnic came from. They celebrated the lynchings.
Mm. Yeah.
Strange fruits hanging from the trees.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
You cut off when I was getting ready to hit on a good point. Now I forgot it now.
Oh, sorry.
Well, in these type of programs, you can't say it all. It's so much to say that
yes,
when the program is over, you say, I should have said so-and-so. I should have said this. There's so much to say. We have such a backlog of ills coming from our community that was inflicted upon us by our former slave master's children. And it's always going to be this way. I mean, these great men who've been telling us that you'll never be able to get equality in this type of society. You'll never do it. The only thing that could happen for us is that we be integrated out of existence in this country. That's very difficult.
That's very hard. That's very hard because, you know, we are, and I know for a fact, you know, I got family that has, have interracial marriages and are interracial children. And so when you got all of this is already in the mix and mingled in your family, some of much, you know, and so I feel that I can't come to be racist against anyone simply because I have these different nationalities in my family, you know, and when you see the kids And you see that person and you see what has transpired in your family, you say to yourself, well, then I can't blame this person because she had nothing to do with it or he had nothing to do with it. And then when you try to separate yourself, when you want to separate and out of this integration that they started long before, is going to be really difficult because you got families, you got people that are already married into the white race and whatever, and it's not going to happen because they don't believe that these things will happen to them and their kids, because their kids are considered black kids. They're not considered just because your dad is white or your mama white and your mother is black and your father, they don't care about that. I mean, no. The bottom line is if you are already married into these families and has already been integrated, it's very difficult to try to make that black woman or that black man understand, look, you got to separate yourself from that because that don't mean you no good. These people so far into it, they can't see beyond what they already have in front of them, you know. So
you're right.
When you talk about separation, yeah, when you talk about separation and how and what way, and I'm sure that a lot of these interracial marriages have experienced being on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very difficult situation that we as African American people or New African or whatever you want to call ourselves, we're in a very precarious predicament. I read an article a couple of months ago where they stated that 58% of black males in America have a white male ancestry, maybe in the great-grandfather, something like that. And I said to myself, now, when the genes are passed into you as an African, you're carrying around this white gene in you. See, the thing that happened to us, that they messed up our gene pool. They started messing up our gene pool when they started raping the slaves. I mean, if you're a man and you got people to do your beck and call, anytime you want a woman, you just say, come and get it, whether she's married or not. And the offsprings of those females, of those black slaves, he would introduce his sons to, you know, I mean, it's just a mess. So you see that the only options that we as a people have is that whatever choices that you're going to have to make, we're going to have to make some serious choices in the future, and these are choices that our people have been running from for all these years. You see, these are some serious issues. We're going to have to find a way to deal with this miscegenation that's taking place, the bringing of other people of so-called color here, but they classifying them as white, you see? So we don't know, we don't realize that we have been programmed to fail, and that programming has messed us up real bad. And I don't really see a good outcome. The only outcome that could be is that those who want to do and those who don't want to don't do. Everybody's going to have to make a choice or a decision.
Yeah,
well, we have a few callers in here too, and I want to let them in. If you just look at South Africa and take that as a template, you will see that it has the Africans, it has the Indians that the whites brought over there, it has the Chinese and the Asians that the whites brought over there, then it has another class called the Coloreds. And these are the ones like Barack Obama, who don't consider themselves black or white, they consider themselves biracial. And not long ago, I was reading this book by the Anglo-Saxon Society, an old blue vein white society, racist society, that was saying that America is becoming like South America. Miscegenation ran wild there. But, you know, all the people in South America didn't look the way they looked until the whites went over there and enslaved them and raped the women and, you know, assimilated. But this is what happens with a conqueror. If you go back and you look at the Roman Empire and you come up, all conquerors assimilate with the people that they conquered in order to rule them through the offspring they have with the women. And, you know, this is what's happening to us. You know, you got Obama up there. Now, he's a black man that see things going on in the black communities in America, in Africa, in Jamaica, Haiti, and all these places blacks are being, tortured and destroyed, but he don't say nothing. But one little white kid get killed, he's all on the, what's the name, have tears in his eyes. And, you know, we don't even care about ourselves, and we have to stop accepting that don't want to be black. They just only black when they're around us, you know. And Lot, before the brothers could get the white women, they had the light-skinned. When I remember back in the day, you could get killed over a light-skinned woman in the hood. If somebody was going with her and you said something, I mean, they would actually kill you over them. And I say that was the prelude to them wanting and having them white women. But as far as I'm concerned, the whole civil rights movement was a miscegenation movement to assimilate with white folks, because that's what they wanted. And this is where we are today. We assimilated to a certain degree. They want to wash the black cleanly out of America, period. I mean, they just have something against black people that, I mean, nobody can even understand their hate and malice that they have for black people. When you could take another human being, destroy their bodies and hang them from trees and rip them apart, I mean, you know, you can't be human. You know, you can't be human. And the thing about blacks being racist, blacks cannot be racist because they don't have no power. Racism means prejudice plus the power to implement your racism. Because I can go up on the roof on the top of the Empire State Building and holler honky cracker or whatever all day long. Is nothing going to happen but me losing my voice or something like that. But because I don't have the power to implement that ideal. You know, but they have the power to implement the ideal that black people is this and black people, even black people starting to believe what they say about them. You know, and like Malcolm X said, he said that one day the white man had the masses loving Germans. They loved Germany, everything for Germany they wanted. Then the next thing you know, they made them hate Germany. With the news and I mean, they could project this stuff with the television, the radio, the books, and everything. So this hate is a systematically taught thing, and it's not going nowhere. Black people are going to have to get themselves together, you know, and say we're not going to assimilate. We're going to stick to ourselves and work together for the benefit and the upliftment of our race. Sister, the mic is yours. And then after that, I'm going to let these callers in before it gets too late.
Okay. I'm just going to briefly say, we had put up a petition up for people to go and actually sign the petition, because we was trying to get at least 1 million people to sign. And see, when it says reaching out to people and saying, well, how come no one is, you know, really trying to do anything about it, we have. And well, of course, like you say, it all depends on the person want to take part of it or participate in what you're doing. And if you want to try to get something, you have to support. You must support and support in what you're trying to do. And it's not about just Jermaine. It's about every child, every person that has been wrongfully unjust, to sign this petition and have voice for those families and for those families that have lost a loved one, you know. And but we have to get started somewhere. But if you don't sign the petition, if you don't take a part in it, this is where we're reaching out for people. And we also sent a letter to our Barack Obama, our president, about this situation. And we know that it's not him that's running. He might be the president, But he's not the one that's running. He's just overseeing the military. He's not. He can't do anything about running this country. You got all these other politicians that are sitting high telling him what he can and cannot do. So now he can only do so much. But we see the things that he does go running to when he necessarily need to go to when it comes down to going to the aid of white people or going to the aid of our Connecticut school getting shot up. And it was predominantly all whites, you know, and he going supporting these white people where the hurricanes done come through, Hurricane Katrina done come through and wipe them out. He go and show his face in that, but it never show his face in the black area where people are getting shot, killed, and their homes and things are getting burned down and knocked down to the ground. You don't see him supporting that. So now somewhere down the line is this is what when you got someone is trying to reach out to you and help you, you should want to do those things. You should want to take a part of that because you are a part of this whole situation. And regardless what you think, you know, is not going to go away. And out of sight, out of mind doesn't mean that it's not going to come to you. You know, so we have to understand if we're going to unite and come together, we're going to have to try to do something. And if there's somebody trying to reach out to you and do something about it, you should want to support. You should be glad to support. Well, my life is not easy. We're not having it. My family is just my. So now it's time to start reaching out and helping one another. And it's not like we haven't tried to get across to Washington, D.C. on these things. And I'm sure that they've had many letters and many petition going across this. But guess what? The deficit that's going across is not the people that is going to help us. They're the main problem. These are the ones that's issuing out all of the rules and regulation and what is going to be done about it and what's not going to be done about it. So this is who we're dealing with. So when people talk about, well, where is the law? Where is justice? We're not going to ever get justice as long as they're sitting up there in office. That's how it is.
We never had justice in the first place. And for all those people who say Barack Obama can't do nothing, he did something for the gays and got their laws passed for them to do what they want to do. He passed laws for women to be protected to kill their babies in abortion clinics, right? I mean, he over there in Africa, telling Africa they're going to get sanctions if they don't accept homosexuality. Barack Obama could do a lot for the black community if he wanted to. But he don't want to do anything because he was birthed by a white mother. You know, and when the man is not black. We got to stop accepting all these people, you know, from mixed marriages, direct mixed marriages, and saying that they are black like we are because it's not true. I mean, you just lying to yourself. When we came over from the ships on Africa, we didn't even look the way we look now, the ones that came on the ships, because there was some that were already here, you know, and we just got to come to the facts as, they, like Brother Bartley said, they done damaged our DNA. And we have a lot of people in our gene pool that's saying that they're black because they look black on the outside. But on the inside and in their mind, they're whiter than snow.
Well, we do know the real reason why they're trying to get rid of us because, see, they know the truth about us and who we truly are and in this land. They know the whole truth and nothing but the truth about who we are as kings and queens. And so, like I said, they have studied us. So they know where we come from. They know where they come from. So, in fact, if you try to wipe out a generation, that means that they know why they're wiping you out because they're not planning on giving us nothing. So, therefore, we are doing the right thing as far as continuing to write letters and petitions and whatnot. We're trying to follow the law. We're not out here trying to start a revolution. We're not trying to start a war. And that's what they want us to do, so they can give them a reason to start cutting us down.
Mm.
See, but the thing is that we're in the midst. That's why they try to keep us separated, whites over here and blacks over there. So when they start bombing people and start killing folks and running into your community, killing you up, they're not wiping out their generation. And there's a few of them going to be gone, but that's simply because they're living in the neighborhood and they can care less about these people over here. And all I said, like my husband and I said, they already done sold the United States to China. Everything that we get comes from China. So now this country already had been sold when we went in debt. So now we're not the only one that's going to go through this crap. It's going to hit home, too. Those that are thinking that they living high off the hog, I don't care if you're living up on the hill and it's a nice neighborhood and it's all white, beautiful homes or whatever, they've been sold, too. They just don't know it.
Well, let me get ready to let these callers in. And as one thing I want to say real quick is that this system was built on debt. If you look at the old money, if you ever get a piece of it, it says certificate of debt. This is all about being in debt. They can't keep you working unless you're in debt. So let me see if this caller has anything to say. Call with the last four numbers, 6469. I'm about to let you in. If you have anything to say, go ahead and add to the show. Yes, caller.
And he got to push one to get in, right?
Yes, they push one for me to see him. Caller with the last four digits, 6469. That ain't your number, sister, is it? 412.
Yes, that's my number. I'm sorry. 6469 is my number.
Oh, okay. Let me turn that back off. We had another call that came. I'm going to ask another caller here. Caller 0113, do you have anything to add to the show? Any questions?
Well, yes, sir. Can you hear me, bro?
Yes, I can hear you, brother.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've been listening to the show, man, for the last few minutes. And let me say this, bro. With the newer generation, if any of you got younger kids, when each generation creates like its own slang or its own culture, and then as a parent, when you try to interface with them, they say, "Oh, Dad, you old. You." That's old stuff you talk. But, from listening to the phone conversation, when we didn't follow the advice of Marcus Garvey, right, it seems like everything that comes after that, every approach, right, every idea, every movement, it's like Marcus Garvey saying, "What are you guys doing?" I brought Pan-Africanism to you 20, 30 years ago. You didn't follow it. Now your shoes is tying in a knot, right? Let's go after legislation. let's boycott, right? Let's try the newest approach. Let's take over the school, right? So it's almost like this is not a game of monopoly. There is no do-over, right? You had a prophet. We so much believe in church. Marcus Garvey. He says, "Hey, it's Pan-Africanism. We move from integration, separation, black power, Pan-Africanism." Nothing you hear on any show, right, is newer than Pan-Africanism. It's the old stuff warmed over, even this show. It's there's nothing new. It's warmed over. Okay, so let me say this. Here's the conclusion. This so-called thing we call the black community in America, it's done. Right? Okay. In war, if an army retreats, that's not a sign of weakness. It's that they know something, right, that makes them retreat. This thing we're trying to create now, again, in America, called the black community, been there, done that. It's not coming back. Now, that's not pessimistic talk. These are historical facts based off of science. It's done. The best thing you can hope for now is that some type of vanguard group of Africans who live in America who are Pan-African reconnect back to Africa economically, socially, mentally, and there will be a few saved. Other than that, you're not getting ready to create no black community in America again. This is not a monopoly game. You don't collect the money and start over. Now, so, well, brother, we got to keep faith. We got to keep hope alive. That's not science. It has nothing to do with hope. What you need to hope to do now is to make sure that the African race has a press on the globe. It's not, it got nothing to do with America now. Yeah, here's my
exactly.
Last point. Here's my last point. I ask this question. Who says African American has to be in power or a major player to make sure that the African race survives? No one can give me an answer that says that the African American has to be a part of that. Think about it. Who is the African American that he's this great player in the world that he's got to be in power in order for the African race to survive? The African American is done. He's a permanent underclass, and that's where he's going to stay. Quit trying to save the African American. And I'll stop right there, bro.
So, my brother, you said quit trying to save the African American. So if we quit trying to save the African American, then what plan do we have and what actions do we take? Is the brother still with us?
No, I think he hung up.
Okay, I think he muted out.
I didn't think he was still here. Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, yes. Yes.
All right.
What I was asking was...
Let me go through it again. You had the civil rights movement, right, which was the carving out of space in America for the African American. We reached the pinnacle. Okay. Once we seen that that wasn't going to work for what we were after, the conscience made us move towards black power. I mean, these movements are not separated. You have to chronologically connect them. All right. So here comes black power. Okay. Integration is not the way. Let's go back to black power. Right. So we attempt to have black power in America. We see that that doesn't work. And you have a prophet comes on the scene, Marcus Garvey. Quit trying to create communities behind enemy lines. Connect back to Africa. Or Haiti, create strength, military, economics, and then you come back and whoop your enemy's ass. That's what he told you to do.
Yeah. Well,
we
I understand.
That away. We poo-pooed that away, or we went right back to marching.
Well, you know, everything that we're talking about opinions. Right.
Basically, we're talking about
opinions and concepts. Is that right?
No, now, sir. We're talking about social science. It's not opinion. We're talking about science.
What's science? What's the science that you're talking about?
The science is the social science of organization. organizing, organizing for what your circumstance calls for at that particular time. That's science. That's not opinion. Moving from civil rights to black power was not somebody's opinion that we should do it. It was the correct move. It wasn't an opinion.
The move integration was placed upon our community by the liberals. Okay? So a lot of the stuff, you know, a lot of the stuff has been engineered to put us in a position, a certain position. Now, if you're talking about going back to Africa, how can you go back to Africa with no economic base, no political base, or anything of that nature? That's not even realistic.
Okay. And this is another. This is the biggest misnomer of Pan-Africanism. The biggest misnomer of Pan-Africanism by people who haven't studied it is that every black needs to pack a briefcase and move to Africa. Who told you that that is what Pan-Africanism is?
Well, let me talk to you on this, because we're taking the show away from where we were going.
Okay,
Jermaine.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to ask this because me and Brother Bartley are both Garveyites out of Division 121 in Philadelphia, PA. And Marcus Garvey said that all black people were not going to go back to Africa in the first place, but he wanted to set up a base in Africa to give us economic power achieved by us and us alone, because he looked at us, and we still look at us today, as peons in the world, as serfs, you know, serfdom. And the thing is that I do not believe we're ever going to get justice in America. I'm with you on what you're saying, brother, you know, but not to try to save the people, I'm not with that. Because it's in our nature to love and try to save each other. It was taken away from us by these people. And it's been so many black bodies hanging around, like the strange fruit sister wrote the record. I believe that's what drove her insane, when she seen the lynchings down south. Billie Holiday. And it's desensitized. They're like, a black man getting killed to us is nothing no more. I mean, we've been taking up arms against each other and killing each other like it's nothing now. Because we've been in this mess so long. And Marcus Garvey also said that the Negro better watch out, has to watch out, because he will take in all the poisons of Western civilization and die from its effects. And that's what I see going on today. We're dying from the effects of this thing that was not even meant for us. And I hear you, brother, and we hope that you come back and to the show again. And, you know, I would like to get you to come on and you know, we'll talk about this and do a show on it. So I'm going to pass you my number. You can give me a call. You got a pen?
Go ahead, bro. Yeah, I'm with you.
My phone number is 267-582-4211. It's Brother Akbar. Okay, now we want to get the queen on. We're going to leave you in skew, brother, but we're going to bring the queen back on so she can finish up and give the people her information and how they can contact her and sign the petition to try to bring some justice for her slain nephew. Sister Shayla?
Yes, I'm here.
The mic is yours.
Right now, you can contact me. They can go on, they can Google Frederick Jermaine Carter, and they will be able to find Stop the Legalized Lynching petition on there, and they can just go in and to that Stop Legalized Lynching and sign the petition. It's been there from the very beginning. Jermaine was, the year Jermaine was found lynched. And I don't think we still haven't even reached a million people yet. So it's still in effect. And so they can contact me through my email address, which is spelled like my name. And I will give it to you. It's shalirross@yahoo.com. And it's spelled S-H ELLIAROSS@yahoo.com. And they can also reach me on Facebook, and they can look up the name Shalia Ross, and they can always inbox, email me, or inbox me there, or befriend me on Facebook.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I also want to give a shout-out to Nandy's Knowledge Cafe in Highland Park, Michigan. If you're ever in Michigan and you're in Highland Park, that's right in the middle of Detroit, come down to Nandy's Knowledge Cafe. She sells books. She has an African museum there. And they have a shop where they sell goods at, and they have a place where you can rent space if you want to have events there. And I also want to talk about, have Brother Bartley to talk about his crafts, because Brother Bartley is a craftsman that makes metal statues and jewelry and all sorts of things by his hand, straight by his hand from a black man. And we want to start showcasing that on the show. Brother Bartley, can you give them your website so they can contact you?
Well, I can give out my email. My email is NUEGYPT10@yahoo.com. If you are looking for any products, as far as if you're going to a craft show or anything like that, and you need some products, you can contact me, and we can probably do some things and get you what you need if I have it in my repertoire. I also have some Marcus Garvey copper coins, pure copper coins, and these are going for about $10, $10 or $12. But we want everybody to have one of these coins. The first coin that has been minted in the United States, or the first medallion has been minted in the United States, depicting a man with such esteem as the Honorable Marcus Garvey.
The greatest leader we ever had?
Oh, yeah, he's the greatest. He's the greatest because he brought more people together, over 11 million people. So if you can pull that many people together, you must have your thing together. And the brother had it going. The brother had it going on. And what happened is, I think it's a failure in the so-called membership in the UNIA that failed to carry out the mandate that he had set up, or to carry out his program. And and this was a lot of jealousy in there, a lot of agents. And if you look today, you can see the results of years of failure of the group to carry out what the Honorable Marcus Garvey wanted to see for his people. Economics, the whole nine yards. Culture, the whole nine yards. And it didn't happen. And a lot of people are probably disillusioned about that.
You know, the Jewish liberals used their black puppets to take Marcus Garvey down, you know, because they were pushing the black people while they were going for nationhood, you know, and for Israel. And we already had a nation called Liberia sitting right there, still sitting right there today in their constitution. We're citizens. And most black people don't even know that. In
they
their constitution. They don't want to know because they want to stay here with this white man. But the thing is that they're trying to change the constitution of Liberia now because they know black people are starting to wake up. It's a lot of black people that moved to Africa. Don't get a lot of people getting it twisted. And it's a lot of black people in Ghana, Ethiopia, you know, Liberia, Cote d'Ivoire. I mean, all throughout there, black people have been going back to Africa over the years because they feel as though there's never going to be a fighting chance for the black man here in America.
Yeah, well, that's not helping the sister in her situation. When people come with situations like this, and all these people supposed to have all these groups, and using these big phases, but when you need help, they don't have the unity enough, and they don't have the strength to do anything. what I'm talking about is we need a remaking of our people, because we're not a community. We're just settlers here in America, and we're going to have to come to some, like I keep stating, that we're going to have to make some real serious decisions on what direction we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, sister, I sympathize with what you're going through, because it could happen to anybody. But this, to me, seemed like by them not having an investigation and the whole scenario surrounding this case, that you can't get no type of help at this point, points to the fact that we are powerless here in America. And if we don't come together and try to get some power to do some things, we're going to be picked off one at a time. That old saying by the European by the name of Benjamin Franklin, he said, we will all hang together or we will hang separately. And that is really happening to our people. They're just picking off these young black men one at a time, you know. And it's just mind-boggling the way things are happening to our people. So, sister, I hope we hope you can come back because you seem to have knowledge, conscious knowledge of what's going on in our community. We need you to keep sharing and keep your nephew's name alive. And maybe we could organize around this, because this is a modern-day lynching. This is not like in the 50s. This happened in 2010. And if you can lynch a black man like this and sweep it under the rug, it's like Akbar stated earlier. Man, you wander off on a road somewhere down in Mississippi, they can hang you up. You know, nobody never know what happened to you. The sheriffs and everybody, they all speak the same language. Kill a nigga when you can and get away with it, and don't worry about it. So, I mean, it's the more things change, the more they still remain the same. The past is right now.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yes, it is. We will, you know, we have to continue to keep moving forward. You don't want to start moving backwards, that's for sure. And you don't wish anything like this to happen to anybody else, but we know out there in this life, it's happening every day. We just don't hear about it on the news, and pretty much it never hit the media that we know about. So now, again, we know that is some things that we just can't fix, and some people we just can't change. But those that we can reach, those are the ones that we wanna we wanna deal with. So when the cheese hit the fan, then all of a sudden it start to affect the ones that didn't want to have anything to do with it. It'll become a problem, you know, for them. So some of them we can bring over, and some of them we're not. Some are going to go down with the rest of them because they choose to. So I look at it in a positive manner, that we have to continue to move on, because we can't stop. If you stop, then there's going to be a problem, you know. But you got to keep moving. If you don't keep moving, you're not going to get anywhere. So.
Well, the main problem is Negroes did stop. When they pushed the table, they thought that they was in paradise. They got a job, a new car, a new house. And, you know, basically my opinion is that the biggest fear of the Negro is the cutting off of his livelihood.
Sure.
It's not, you know what I'm saying, because, oh, I can't go down there and say that I'll lose my job. I can't post this on Facebook. My boss is looking at my Facebook page, you know. And, you know, I mean, it's the fear of their livelihood. And until we are able to feed ourselves, we're going to stay in this condition. Because if you boycott, say you boycott the stores, how long can you boycott the grocery stores until you need to go there and get the food if you're not growing your own food?
That's very true.
So, like Marcus Garvey said, any leader who's leading you to go back to go to work for the white man is leaving you is leading you back into bondage. You know, because he believed in working for self, doing for self, and that was the ideology of black people coming up out of slavery. You know, to do for self, because the stigma of just being working for a white man in slavery was you know, they didn't want no parts of it. They wanted to go and for themselves. I mean, black people went all across this land. They don't tell you about the blacks who pioneered the West and stuff, Pap Singleton and them that went out there and pioneered. Then the white folks come behind them with the railroads and all that stuff. So, you know, everything we do, it seems like we can't get rid of these people. Black people want to bring them in to everything. Like the Black Lives Matters, this is the same thing as the Civil Rights Movement with the whites in there too, and it desensitizes your movement, and they run your movement. You know, and that's what happened to the movements back then, the Black Panthers. That's what happened to them. The white liberals came in. They tried to get into Garvey's movement, but Garvey did everything to keep them out. You know, and, you know, we got to, like Brother Bartley said, come to a conclusion of which way are people going to go. Because they got us going in circles with all this miseducation.
Mm-hmm.
But now we are at the end of the show, and you said your piece about how to get in contact with you, and Brother Bartley gave out his email address. And my, I'm going to give you my website. My website is www.wakeupafricanpeople@wix.com. You can go in there and you can get on my Gmail. You can get on my YouTube page and my Twitter page. And come on in and call into the show and give me a call. I put my number out there if you want to be on the show, if you have any information that you want to get out to the people. Anybody's welcome to come on the show to give out the information, because there's a lot of things happening to our people. They desensitized, they scared, because they don't know how they're going to live today or tomorrow if they try to go up against the system, because we have forgotten how to feed ourselves, and we were those who ran the agriculture in the country at one time. We were feeding the country, planting the plants and all that stuff. Now we can't even plant no plants for ourselves. It's a damn travesty. Black people gave up all that farmland to come up to the north to concrete jungles. And now we're realizing today that that was a bad mistake.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bad, you know, because down south, everywhere, the whites didn't dominate the whole south. That's a lie. Down there with a Brother Robert Williams and them was running, it was black people down there that dared white folks to come in their neighborhood way before him, down south. You know what I'm saying? Because they could have wiped all them Negroes out. Some of the Negroes stand tall, but you're not going to hear about them stories like that. My granddad was one of them. You know, and my granddad on my mother's side, he was lynched down south, you know, over a light-skinned black woman that the white man was in love with. And they told him to leave her alone, but he had children with her. So the white man caught him, right? And they beat him to death, tar and feathered him, and drug him by a car, you know, until he was dead, to his bones. He ripped all the clothes and down to his bone, they drug him in the back of the car. And I really don't tell that story that much about that story because it hurts me, because my oldest son looked just like my grandfather.
Mm.
Together. You know, but we have been through some horrific things. You know, I've been shot at down south in Alabama, going trying to play in the white folks' playground. We ain't know no better. Nobody didn't tell us we couldn't go on their playground. And when we were playing with the white kids, pushing the thing, the merry-go-round, the white kid fell off. And he started screaming, "Nigga, nigga, nigga." And the other white, a youth came out, looked like he was about 14, 15 years old with the shotgun shooting. We was little kids. And I don't know told me to zigzag. We zigzagged and ran till we got in the woods. We ran deep into the woods as we could and stayed in the woods till we thought they was gone. We come out the woods and went home. We couldn't even tell nobody because we ain't had no business being over there.
Mm.
Yeah. And when I went down south now, it's nothing but a poor white project. You won't want to get caught in there. They even got blacks living in there now. It used to be all white at one time. So, you know, the strings in America is being pulled by these liberals. They Jews, we call them small hats. They being pulled, and I don't want to go into that story because we ain't got that much time, but That's what I'm leaving you with tonight. The strings by people in high places that don't give a damn about black people and don't even give a damn about most white people.
Yep. They all stand together.
So this has another episode of Wake Up African People, and we thank the Sister Queen, Shayla Ross, for coming in and giving us this information. We're hoping to have her back to give us an update on what's going on with her nephew. And us at Wake Up African People are here to serve her, and she can use this station and our website and anything to get this information out. And everybody that hears this information, please go Google Frederick Jermaine Carter. That's his name, Frederick Jermaine Carter. Look at the case, spread it around on the internet, and keep his name out there so he can get justice. That's all we can do for him right now. Good night.
Good night, Truth Doctor and Shalia.
Good night, and thank you very much.
You're welcome.